Every day for the first 4 months of her baby's life, Amy Brown kept a journal of poems. They're candid and often very raw stories of a young woman trying to make sense of a radically changed life. Amy, who lives in Melbourne these days, has now published that journal, calling it Neon Days.
1st December 2016. To write while the baby is awake is cheating. He, like most, is yet to see this as work, prefers watching me fold washing or dry dishes or cook dinners, unless he is allowed to look at the scurrying across the screen. Now he is lying in his forest with a red-faced lion under his left arm and a squirrel dangling above the fingers of his right hand. He fills the mat with his kicks and flails as if growing deliberately before my eyes. We have given back the plastic teal baby bath and bags of quadruple zero clothes and the white bassinet. Soon we will pass on this playmat to a new baby and move ours into a larger habitat than the Garden of Eden / Snow White's wood, rattling with plush flora and fauna. An apple with a mirror glued to its back flashes light across his face. He loves his own reflection without knowing what it is, but sometimes is overwhelmed and has to bury his face in my clavicle, escaping the awful significance of himself.
Amy, it's not uncommon for me to start books with the acknowledgements at the end. Don't know why. And I was so delighted when you were writing to your son, essentially, about whom you've written this verse journal, this collection of works, saying that I can only hope that eventually you'll understand why I wrote this during your first months. But it is kind of, it's kind of a love letter, while at the same time being a brutally honest account of the reality of parenthood.
Indeed, and people ask if I've read any to him yet or if I've thought about him reading it, but I'm thinking more of his adult self coming back to it and wondering how he'll feel about that exposure, because as I talk about in the book, it's primarily a self-portrait, an exposure of my motherhood, but inevitably that brings him into it and it brings my partner into it. And that's probably been the hardest part of writing this book, the ethics of implicating my family in it as well. So I hope that, as I say in the acknowledgements, I hope that he sees it as a loving record rather than as an intrusion into his privacy.
You started writing this so soon with regards to giving birth. You've got, my right leg was still numb, my breasts were foreign and solid with coming milk, and there was a cannula in my left wrist. And you couldn't shift your gaze from the 8 pounds of flesh that were lying in the clear plastic bassinet next to your bed. So you started writing this very quickly. Was that simply intuitive?
Yes. Yeah, there was nothing calculated about that. It was a sort of survival tactic, I think. So I was given a pen by the midwife when I started feeding Robin for the first time. She said, just take a note of how long he's feeding for and from which side, and you know, when you change his nappy, just to make sure everything's in order. And so I did that religiously, trying to be a diligent mother. But when I have a pen and paper, I tend to write other things as well. And I needed to process what had happened the day before, or the hours before, really. So it was kind of natural for me to try and write out what I remembered of the birth as a way of containing it, I suppose, rather than being contained by it or being overwhelmed. So that was the starting point. It didn't feel like poetry, really. It just felt like another excretion, another thing coming out during that time.
Yes, we get to know bodily parts and fluids very well in that time.
Indeed.
When you read it back, when you were starting to work on this, you know, thinking of publishing it, this is what, three years on almost, did it take you right back to that time?
I know that any recount of an event is partial and you can't get all of it, but I'm, for myself at least, grateful that that version of myself kept these notes, because I think there was a lot there that I would not remember otherwise. And I do get memories of those early delirious, sleep-deprived days. And
you're supposed to forget the bad parts, aren't you? Or the human race would never have second children.
Exactly, right. Maybe that's why I don't have a second child. I think it does take me back, but not with that acute emotion, though, of the time. I sort of remember it, but I don't feel it, if you know what I mean. It's I feel quite distant from that person who I was in those early months. That's what enables me to be surprised by it as well. When I'm reading back, there's a lot that I've forgotten as I read back. I'm like, oh, I don't remember writing that. But it's, you asked sort of about the editing process. The first returning to the notebooks was a year after keeping them. Decided to dig them out and try and do something with them, and that's when I started adding the footnotes at the bottom of the page as well. And so that was kind of the first return to that time. And then, of course, editing it with Ashley Young from VUP this year has brought me back to it again. So it's sort of been lots of different versions of myself involved in writing and editing this book.
But those footnotes are just as important, I think, aren't they, as the verse?
Yeah, for me, they are crucial to making it shareable. It feels like the verse itself alone is something private, which sounds odd for something published, I guess, but with the support and the protection of the footnotes, it becomes something that others can share and understand. I guess they provide context and they open the work up a bit. I don't think I would have published it, just the verse alone, without that support of that reflection a year later. It was kind of a solution to the problem of knowing that the verse was poetically imperfect. There were sort of aesthetic flaws to it, but I wanted to maintain that because it was part of the kind of rawness and urgency of writing it in its original form. So I wanted to maintain that, but also frame it in a way, and that's what the footnotes do, or at least that's what I hope that they do. They provide context, and so, yeah, I think you're right that they're just as important.
You use that word overwhelming at the start of our conversation, Amy. Did putting all those emotions, so many emotions that you were going through, you know, hormonally induced and just perfectly naturally there, finding the words to describe them, did that help you to prevent you or make the sense of being overwhelmed less strong?
In an article I wrote for the spin-off recently, I sort of talk about it as a bit of cheap therapy, kind of a moderating and a monitoring of my mood at the time, which, yeah, as you say, hormonally and naturally was quite erratic and overwhelming. And I think part of the reason for keeping those daily poems was to not control myself, but, yeah, monitor or make sense of the violent moods that I was subjected to, that I think all new mothers probably are subjected to. And again, like the very first poem in the hospital, it wasn't really calculated, at least not to begin with. It was just a survival tactic to, yeah, keep me feeling like myself when lots of other things were changing.
Your sense of humour comes through particularly, I think, in those footnotes. But even so, your second footnote to push, you're a good pusher, the obstetrician said the next day. And then you go on to explain exactly what happened. And you know, this was not a straightforward birth by any means. That was brutal, really.
No, I think complicated is the word that keeps complicated. Being used.
Complicated? Oh,
okay. You see a doctor there, like, was it a natural birth or were there complications? Yes, there were complications. Yes, I felt very lucky to have the obstetrician that I had, but also I think it took a while to write and reread to realise how traumatic it had all been. But also subsequently, I think probably most new mothers find this when they tell the story of their birth to other mothers, it seems actually like the norm to have a traumatic experience. It's a lot more common than you hear of before you go through it. So like that was one of the reasons for thinking about publishing it as well, that, you know, even in 2016, 17, 18, 19, and, you know, this era we live in, and even with the open friends that I have around me, I wasn't hearing the detail that I needed and wanted to hear before, enduring, and after this experience. So that was one of the reasons that reasons for sharing, reasons for thinking about making it publishable rather than just private.
These lovely little bits of advice that you're given by people as a first time mum. A friend warned me months ago that my baby would start to smell of other people. Perfumes, creams, cologne, sweat. Your baby's head will press against strangers' throats. I just thought these little moments, you know, this is 4 months we're talking about. It's a really concentrated period. But you and Nick experience so much in that in that time, and you learn so much. My gosh, that learning curve is super steep, isn't it?
Absolutely. And yes, you're sort of worried in the original writing and then in the decision to try and make it publishable that it's just too banal and daily. You know, like, who wants to hear about like what my baby's head smells like? That's just too particular. But I hope at least it's in those specific details that larger truths come out, and that accumulated together in a four-month sort of collection, there's a kind of coherence to them that makes them more than just these banal observations. But yeah, that example you read out, I guess it was something that surprised me. You can't possibly foresee everything that you're going to learn in those months. Even the minutiae is important and surprising. So I hope that's the case anyway.
You write towards the end of the book that you said that you would stop keeping the journal after the fourth trimester, or the three-month mark. And are you still writing daily?
Not as daily. I think that's more to do with being a high school teacher full-time than about not wanting to keep the writing up. I write more during the holidays, but there's just a lot going on and a lot of energy devoted elsewhere. But what I have kept up in a slightly sort of obsessive way is these kind of footnote entries. They're too small to be called essays, but I guess reflections with those infinitive verbs as the titles. It seems like a way of mapping or making sense of the many things to do at the moment and in this time of life with a small child and work, and that sort of containing again of busyness and overwhelmment for different reasons. So I'm keeping that up, but not nearly as regularly as I was during those 4 months.
Amy Brown, her verse journal Neon Daze, D-A-Z-E, is published by Victoria University Press.